Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Give it to me!
Hello, all. I'm Rich Straffolino.
And I'm Tom Merritt. Welcome to It's a Thing, the weekly podcast supported by you, where we analyze all of the things in the world and say, that thing, not so much a thing. Oh, but that thing is definitely a thing. And this thing might be a thing, but we'll talk it out. Thanks for joining us. Of course, Molly Wood is off this week, traveling in an airplane. Oh, man, I can't wait to hear about that. I'm sure we're going to get stories next week. But our producer, Rich Straffolino, has bravely stepped up to join us. And you've spotted some things.
I have. It's been a long journey this week. Lots of things to weigh. I had to bring out a set of scales to adjudicate which mm-hmm. would be the proper one to put on the show this week. But I was driving around this whole summer. Right. Like that's like kind of like the only thing you can kind of do to get out of the house. Just get out, go for a drive. Probably not great for the environment. In fact, I know it's not. But what are you going to do? COVID. But I noticed something that is inexplicable to me, but I cannot deny its thingness. It's the Adirondack chair, a mm-hmm. staple of outside decor.
That's
right.
This is horribly uncomfortable wooden chair.
Yeah,
it's got like big slats of wood, right?
That's like designed for like if you're over a certain age, you're just never getting out of that chair, and you're not going to be comfortable no matter what. Basically,
It's got the big vertical slats on the back, and then the cross slats on the bottom. And it's if I remember right, it tilts you way down.
Yeah, you are like at a the 90. You're at like a 130 degree angle.
Yeah,
sitting over there. So if you want to be at attention,
it was built originally for seating, but as a torture device, if I'm not mistaken.
If you have artificial hips, that is definitely the case. But so the Adirondack chair, not necessarily a thing in and of itself.
Okay,
but
all right.
An interesting phenomenon that I have seen with the Adirondack chair is using it as a lawn decoration. So, and again, this is, you know, the Adirondack chair, you know, something maybe you put on your front porch. I kind of get that.
Yeah.
Although there are better seating options that you can have. But no, I
usually consider it a warning of like, if you visit us, this is what you're going to have to sit in. Because our neighbors two doors down, they have Adirondack chairs out in the front lawn, or in front of their house, not in the lawn. And I've yet to see them actually sit in them. But they look like they're positioned for like, oh, if we want to sit out on the front porch, we would sit in our Adirondack chairs.
Really, actually, the government should have distributed those to get people from not gathering together.
Yeah.
So that,
like,
you know,
all right,
everyone's going to
you want to get together and infect each other, sit in these chairs.
Exactly. But the interesting phenomenon that I've seen is the Adirondack chair deployed as lawn decorations in situations where it would be completely impractical to actually sit there.
Okay, so that's what I'm curious about. Because like if you just threw the Adirondack chair in the middle of the lawn, you might assume like, oh, I guess somebody wanted to sit in the middle of the lawn. How do you know it's a lawn decoration?
Because I've driven by houses that are so close to the road that and have no front porch that just have two Adirondack chairs where perhaps you would put, I don't know, a bush or so you would just be right on top of like a drain. Yeah. You would be right on top of like a drainage ditch next to like a 4-lane road Adirondack chair. There's no one is going to be sitting in these chairs. Like the porch, theoretically, someone's sitting there. Backyard, it's fair game. That is in theory a chair that can be used.
Right.
I guess my question is, the thingness of this, is this a situation where people have found themselves with Adirondack chairs? Maybe they like the look of them at first and realize that they are impractical. And so now they're trying to find another use for them that does not require them to be sitting in them.
Now, the Adirondack chair, despite my, I think, quite evident opinion of their comfort, it do look cool. right? And whenever you see an Adirondack chair, you think, oh, that place looks like vacation, right? There's that aura around them. So maybe it is, like you say, it's a decoration. I feel like this is definitely a real estate staging trick where you put some Adirondack chairs in what would otherwise look like an ugly strip of empty land. And suddenly it's like, oh, it's got a vacation feel. Not that you'd ever sit in that place, but, you know, it distracts you from what you're looking at.
This is a wonderful, welcoming place where we don't have to sit in these chairs, but we have them if you need them.
Right. And you won't, but they're there.
That's the funny thing is the Adirondack was like my preferred like camping facility, right? When I was in the Boy Scouts, you got in an Adirondack. That's like the best thing ever. I never saw an Adirondack chair in all of my time.
What Adirondack are you talking about?
Like a little tiny house with like it's open. It's like a little tiny cabin with an open door and just some bunks. Huh. We called those Adirondacks.
Yeah, okay. I only know the mountains.
Maybe that's probably where it's at. Now, if I look at the spelling, someone's going to say, hey, dum-dum, you got it wrong.
Well, no, I think the little cabin thing, I assume comes from all that. This originated in the Adirondack Mountains in like vacation bungalows or something. And that's where they got
Adirondacks. Appreciate.
Well, let's get back into the city and do some fast fashion. That's my first thing this week. There is fast fashion is not the new thing. Fast fashion is I want something that looks cool, but I don't want to spend a lot on it. And I think H&M was probably the pioneer in that. Maybe I could be wrong about that, but they're certainly emblematic of that. But there's a new king of fast, or should I say queen of fast fashion, Shein.
Okay. So
you're familiar?
I'm familiar. So I'm familiar with obviously fast fashion. H&M is a go-to for workplace apparel on the cheap for a long time. So what is Shein?
Yeah, parents ask your kids. Shein is the hot new place to get yourself some fashion, and it's worldwide. I think it's a Chinese store in origination, which is almost a sub thing of this. All these like Chinese stores that take advantage of all the inexpensive manufacturing that can happen in China and then parlay that into retail outlets around the world. But yeah, Shein, you go to Shein.com and you'll find, just that same kind of thing, like 20% off all the time. Every time you go, there's a sale and it's cheap bargain stuff that looks cool and keeps you in fashion. And it's where apparently the young folk are shopping these days.
Now, there's been some debate over the ethics, perhaps, of fast fashion, or perhaps the long-term impacts having, kind of cheap, semi-disposable clothes. Do they do anything? Is there anything in their branding or anything that makes this appealing to young people that, hey, this is maybe a little bit more responsible fashion?
They have a collection curated by Katy Perry.
Oh, okay. So, okay, definitely.
And all they right. also have Shein at home. Ooh. Office supplies, party supplies, room decor. Yeah, I am not I am like a good politician pivoting from your question and not answering it. I am not seeing any ecological stuff here. Like this is plain, thrust out consumerism, and it's not an American company, and it's not American centric. There's plenty of them in the United States, but it is a worldwide thing. So, oh, here we go. Social responsibility buried deep down. ISO certified factories, world-class standards for quality, safety, and efficiency. We hold all our employees, manufacturers, and partners accountable to strict quality standards. Fair labor practices, no child labor. Well, that's great.
Bonus.
No forced labor, proper wages. Sustainability. Limited quantity production. Unlike most fashion brands that produce thousands of pieces of each style, which often ends up as waste, we only produce in small quantities, which reduces waste.
I wonder with maybe like some of the homeware kind of aspect to it, if this also in a weird way kind of is complementary. It's not to say that it's a competitor, is trying to be its own version of it, but kind of like that Muji feel. Like, yes. I know that's kind of like more like the brandless kind of like just right. essential basic, yep. but nice basics.
Yep.
But it kind of, some of their branding kind of gives that off, like not like an H&M way where it's very chic, you know, where it's very stylized. Maybe yeah. or Uniqlo. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I could definitely Tsubasa see that. Tsubasa points out Uniqlo. Uniqlo almost makes Shein look. Uniqlo almost looks like an old fashioned Nordstrom's next to Shein is what I'm trying to say.
It's like the gap compared to H&M perhaps. So interesting. That will be interesting. Now I cannot find a way to display their website. Wait a minute. International site.
It's funny. I linked in our show notes
to a
story from Lifestyle, but Lifestyle magazine links to the Arabic version. But if you just take the AR off the front,
I got her now. Oh, all right. Hey, I might be doing some shoppings for some men's essentials. I guess.
There you go. Go check it out. Shein, not just for she's.
He and she are in a Shein. Yeah,
there's also Pet In. I noticed they have a pets section as well.
So Tom, we started out perhaps in the Adirondacks or perhaps in suburbia emulating the Adirondacks. We went international with Shein. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to take us to the virtual skies because flight sims are my other thing for this episode. Now hear me out, Tom.
Yeah, because I'm going to say, well, yeah, there's a new Microsoft Flight Simulator, but what else, man?
So Microsoft Flight Simulator was like the first signal to that. And I guess I am just not I don't know any flight sim people or Microsoft Flight Simulator people. The excitement that I saw around the internet for this game and for the update that represented to me was a little, you know, okay, the thing levers are going here and there. But then I saw the Star Wars Squadron. I just lost the link to it. Star Wars Squadron coming out. Kind of for me, you know, in terms of the number of flight simulators, high profile flight simulators that come out, to have two kind of come out back to back, and then seeing that I have a link to PC Gamer that it was leading to joystick shortages and that prices were skyrocketing as a result and stuff like that.
We've had a lot of shortages in 2020, which I think happens because the manufacturing supply chain has been thrown out of whack. But by now, most of those have been sorted, unless you're trying to get an NVIDIA card, right?
This one was from
joysticks
3 days
would
ago.
Not have been my first guess of something to run out of stock. So I'm guessing that's because of the flight sims then.
Yeah. The Thrustmaster T16000M, which is evidently a gaming accessory and not something else, is going for $120 above MSRP because of shortages in production.
It's worse than the Logitech C920.
Yeah. Thrustmaster. Yes, Tsubasa, that is the real name of it. So I don't know if this is just we've had kind of a dearth of like updated flight simulators. I know like in the Star Wars community, you know, there's a ton of love out there. I used to play X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, whatever, you know, the original game was on my PC back in the day. But that literally was, I don't know, 20 years ago, more than that now, 25 years ago now. And so we've had others like Star Wars titles and stuff like that, but they have kind of like more of a pure combat flight sim for that combined with the super hardcore Microsoft flight simulators. I think we're seeing, you know, maybe a new audience. And then the cherry on top in COVID times, virtual reality, of course, has kind of entered into its own thingness, has kind of taken on its own thing. Microsoft Flight Simulator is opening up private betas now to Microsoft insiders with VR for Microsoft Flight Simulator, and I believe it's also coming to Squadrons as well, or it is available currently for Squadrons as well. So I think the market kind of getting these two high profile games at once after kind of a while of not having that, combined with the immersive experience of VR, I think we're going to be hitting into some prime flight simulator times.
Yeah, and most people not named Molly Wood aren't flying.
This is true. Yeah. I didn't even think of that this might be the ultimate escapism.
Like, I'm not getting on an airplane, but I'll flight sim, and that'll scratch that itch. Yeah.
Did you ever play any like X-Wing or TIE Fighter back in the day on PC?
Not really. No. I did a little of the Microsoft Flight Simulator itself back in the 90s. And I also unlocked the Microsoft Flight Simulator that you could find as an Easter egg in Excel. I did a little of the Star Wars game on GameCube, but yeah, not a lot of flight sim for me.
Yeah, and that first person, I'm trying to remember. I want to say it was GameCube. There was a flight game for Star Wars where you could play like X-Wings, V-Wings, and you know all the other stuff. But it was a third person kind of experience, right? You were like watching
behind
the ship,
the ship that you were flying. Yeah,
yeah. And this, I don't know why it took them so long. Seemingly there's a passionate market for it. I'm assuming there's a spreadsheet somewhere that explains it all very clearly. But I can't deny that we are in high flight sim times.
Times for flight sims.
Indeed.
All right. Well, after that, you must have worked up an appetite. So let's talk about food. If you hadn't seen this already in our preparation document, what would you have guessed that teens eat these days?
Nihilism?
Yes.
I don't know. They go to Chipotle.
Yeah.
Chipotle? I don't know.
Oh, Chipotle's not bad. Chipotle's not far off. Yeah. Chipotle, I'm cheating this week. I'm actually looking at a survey from PiperSandler.com on teen behavior. Chipotle was number three top restaurant amongst teens. Starbucks, number two. And so this is a wide definition of restaurant. They're basically like any food selling place. But the number one restaurant, I was surprised to learn, amongst teens in the United States is Chick-fil-A.
Really?
Yes.
You see, the Chick-fil-A, outside of any external factors, I cannot bring myself to go there purely because every time I see their drive-through, stresses me out so bad because it circles around the store. Maybe it's just teens don't drive. They walk up to there or something
now,
like that.
Every teen that doesn't eat at Chick-fil-A is going to dispute this, but this was a survey of, I can't remember exactly now. I wish I had noted it, but several thousand teens randomly sampled across the United States earlier this year. Not that long ago. And Piper Sandler is a pretty respectable survey organization. Mm-hmm. So they might not be right about Chick-fil-A being the number one necessarily, but they had a lot of teens mention Chick-fil-A.
It's weird. You think teens would like to eat on Sunday? That would be the one thing. Maybe that generates artificial demand for the teens. They can't get it on a certain day.
Right.
So now they're going.
The other two that we mentioned, Starbucks and Chipotle, then Dunkin' and McDonald's as the top five restaurants. Now, what about snacks? What kind of snacks do you think the kids would be into these days?
I'm going to go with sour ropes. I have no idea. Sour straws.
Kids are boring. They're eating a Chick-fil-A and they're snacking on Lay's.
We need to talk to some, does it break out like barbecue? Like it's just Lay's, the
it's just
category
Lay's
of
brand. So it could be multiple types of Lay's underneath this. Yes. It doesn't say sour cream or, or barbecue necessarily.
Cause I was just going to say a plain Lay's. I was like, treat yourself to the Ruffles.
This
kid.
Is why you see it's so many it. Utz commercials during baseball. Right.
Well, cause I mean, if teens like anything, it's baseball and Utz.
Yeah. Well, I would have laughed until I realized that Chick-fil-A and Lay's are the top things. Now you may say, well, hold on. How do you know what these kids are in? Here's some other answers on the same survey. Top influencer David Dobrik. That right alone should tell you that. If you're like, who's David Dobrik? Yes, these were actual teens answering this. Daily video consumption. We're not talking about CBS or NBC. Daily video consumption, a virtual tie between Netflix and YouTube. Cable TV, 9%. Netflix and YouTube, 34% and 32%. Top social media platforms were Snapchat, TikTok, and Instagram. So the kids were answering what you would expect kids to answer on the things that I actually know about in technology. Man, I would never guess Lay's.
I will say the Chick-fil-A thing makes sense to me in that the allure of fried chicken Does seem like just anecdotally
there's some healthier
to me,
items on the Chick-fil-A menu. They have the bowls with the vegetables. So yeah, and kids are, you know, a little more health conscious these days.
No, I would say the opposite is that for
oh,
some,
you think
like
just going for the fried, huh?
No, just the fried shit. Like anecdotally, I have a nephew who like it's not Chick-fil-A, but there's a local kind of regional chain, I guess. It's called Raising Cane's. Literally the only thing they serve you is fried chicken. Like that's the only thing on their menu. You cannot order anything else but fried chicken. Just the quantity that you get is the only thing that varies. It's a beautiful menu. Mm-hmm. But like he would like go there, I mean, like legit, like tell us we went there like 4 days in a row or something like that. So the allure of the fried chicken is there for the teen, at least in my limited anecdotal experience. So I guess I'm not too surprised that Chick-fil-A is the other component there.
Number two snack is Goldfish. Probably toddler. I'm guessing that's on the younger end of the teen responses here, but number two is Goldfish. Number three, Cheez-Its. Number four, Doritos, and number five, Cheetos.
So what we have learned here is that teenage brains don't develop adequate tastes in snacks. They're not responsible in their snacking choices, clearly.
Well, yeah,
till they're older.
That's a very old person reaction. Like, yeah, kids these days.
No. Yeah, but that it's not what I'm saying is that there's a whole world of unhealthiness that you can explore. I'm not saying, oh, you're eating chips and Goldfish. I'm saying like the Cheez-It, you need to be going for, I don't know, not a Triscuit. Those are old people food. Yeah. A Wheat Thin. You need to be going for like a flavored. You need to be going for like a roasted tomato Wheat Thin.
That's
okay,
your answer. I was getting ready to support you until you said Triscuits and Wheat Thins.
Wheat Thins. Wheat Thins where it's at, kids. You will
I
know.
I feel like Doritos feels young. Like Doritos markets itself young, but I mean, I guess Lay's owns Fritos and Fritos has some, I don't know, man. There's a missing piece
there
on the Lay's.
The weird flavor twist Fritos like that. Yeah, if I'm going to go like unhealthy, like let's just go whole hog. Right. Put it right in my veins.
Right.
I'm surprised a Pringles not on there also, or a combo.
Nobody buys Pringles. Nobody
combos
like Pringles.
Nobody?
are Procter & Gamble's biggest loss leader.
Besides tennis balls, I don't know.
Yeah,
Bugles at Porter.
Ah, Bugles. I love
Bugles. Bugles.
I want to buy some Bugles. I love Bugles. I always forget.
I'm just going to throw my kids' Goldfish at some teens next time I see them.
This is the weirdest memory that at Porter just caused, but I remember being in the Ozarks on family vacation when I was young and being in a little like tiny general store kind of place, picking up groceries for our camping and convincing my parents to buy us Bugles because we were on vacation.
I'm just saying, try a combo, kids.
Yeah. Combos. Try combo. Yeah. The pepperoni combos. Mm-hmm. So good. Yeah. I used to live on those in college.
There's like nothing real in there. It's great.
All right, let's get to the feedback. Jim wrote in on spelling, said, I'm with Tom on redoing spelling. This might have been something we talked about in the bonus show, huh?
I believe so, yes.
I think it is about time English spelling gets version 2.0. I'm currently teaching my 5 to 6-year-old to read during the pandemic, and I constantly apologize for how bad it is. Words that end in silent E, sometimes it means long vowel sound, sometimes not. Sometimes both, like live, which is also live. Let's fix this. Love the show. Longtime fan since the BOL days. Thank you, Jim.
Jim, I'm with you. I remember in first grade, the word said, like S-A-I-D, was like, I could not wrap my head around what is this? Yeah. I don't
no,
understand.
No, there's no reason for it to be spelled that way. We're not the French.
All right. Well, Joe's checking in on terminology. Speaking of phraseology for the show and other things, Molly, Tom, Rich, and Clappers were all included. Thanks, Joe.
Nice.
As we roll into the early days of Thingtober, I reflected on Molly trying to come up with the term for two things coming together. I propose Thingmanto, a portmanteau of things.
Nice.
We can file this away with Thingify, Thingiversary, Thingmaker, and all the other jargon that will make it's a thing, a power influencer in the passion economy. Then he also has some Thing confirmations from the youth of today. So following up on some other things, my 13 and 9-year-olds have fully embraced Zoomer because we are all on Zoom all day for school, on top of their other connotations with the word. So interesting there.
That might make it win. Okay.
And then, Tom, some more salt in the wound here. Among Us is totally a thing. My kids started playing it a few weeks ago, and it has replaced Fortnite, Roblox, and Minecraft as the game of choice. Wow. They tend to play while they're also on group calls so that they can talk to friends while they're playing too. In our socially distanced world, it's a nice way for them to connect. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, I saw Among Us everywhere after Manny wrote in recommending that last week, and I was a little like, is this like me in hockey, or is this really a thing? As I remember it, I left it as like, well, I'm going to keep my mind open and look for it. So I don't feel any salt in my wound, but maybe I'm, you know, coloring my past.
we'll leave it open to audience interpretation.
Yeah. But no matter what, that Among Us is definitely a thing. Like I think I think we've seen that. We also got Matt Batt writing in on a wild Fleetwood Mac sighting. So I have loved Fleetwood Mac since the 90s, and I think Tusk is highly underrated, but I digress. Imagine my shock when I see that Fleetwood Mac's greatest hits is number 2 in albums on Apple, and I've also heard them in 2 viral videos in the last week. Also proud of my friends in Voctave making it to number 5, which is how I discovered this thing, and maybe it's a thing. Oh, Matt Batt. Yes. If you hadn't written in about this, I might have made this my own thing. The skateboard drinking, what is he drinking?
Ocean Spray.
Yeah. Listening to Dreams by Fleetwood Mac was becoming a thing on its own, and then Mick Fleetwood replicated it on TikTok, and then it just exploded. My wife pointed out the Mick Fleetwood one to me, and I was like, oh, that's funny. And then it was everywhere, like all over the place. So yeah, definitely a thing.
Never a bad thing to get some Fleetwood Mac out there for the youths of today. And then finally, here, our last bit of feedback here. Steven wrote in about outdoor decor trends. So we're alike thinking about outdoor decor. Yeah. He says, I live in Cedar Park, Texas. Excuse me. That's my Ohio coming out. I like to jog and or run around the area. I've been seeing these pop up all over the place, some with larger tiles, I think granite, and others with that are smaller. So he sent along a picture. It looks like a patio with mulch, and there are these large granite squares that aren't connected. So it's like sidewalk, almost like sidewalk sized tile pieces of concrete or granite, but they're not connected. There's a considerable distance between them. I asked my friend across the street where I got this picture what the design is called, and he said he did not know. Anyway, it's a thing.
Definitely. Thank you, Steven. Definitely. I've seen this in multiple variations. There was a house that just got rebuilt a couple blocks over from me that did the driveway this way with gravel in the space between the squares, which I'm like, well, that's going to be kind of bumpy going in and out, but all right. But I guess it keeps the thing from cracking because you already got cracks and they're filled with gravel and you just fill it with more gravel at some point. I don't know. But I've also seen I've seen it done as sort of a grass in between the spaces as a kind of a way to make a pathway up to a door. And I've seen what that like he saw with the mulch in between. But yeah, the cement square with something filling in between. I don't know what the name of it is either, but that is definitely a thing, Stephen.
I think it's people that don't want to weed and they're just trying to like kill as many surfaces where weeds could possibly grow.
Yeah. No, that's, I think
the lazy person in me thinks that
it's the new landscaping that says, oh, it won't look as bad as just a big flat piece of cement like a driveway, but you won't have to mow it. You won't have to weed it. Yeah, I think that is the idea for sure. All right, let's get to our shout outs made by Rich. Rich, you're here
For
the shout outs. This is pretty awesome. What shout outs have you prepared for us today, Chef Shout Out?
So we actually had a couple people write in about Fleetwood Mac kind of being a thing as a result of the TikTok video. So the shout outs are inspired by Fleetwood Mac albums, which was fun to kind of go in. Also, when we had the email in saying that Tusk is underrated, I thought he was talking about the movie Tusk, and it seemed very random. And then I realized my mistake.
Oh, no. I think he means the song.
I believe it's an album.
Because the album has some hits on it.
Okay. But so I am clearly Tusk. I'm not a deep cut Fleetwood Mac fan.
Yeah. It's a Lindsey Buckingham joint, Tusk. And it's a lot of drums and then people yelling, Tusk!
I'm more of a fan of Stevie Nicks' solo career anyway.
Oh, wow. Shots fired at Fleetwood Mac. All right. We begin the shout outs with, and I like that you went album titles, not song titles. Mm-hmm. We begin the shout outs with the album that Fleetwood Mac first put out when I started in radio, Tango in the Night with Lee Price.
Oh, say you will, Kevin Sill.
From heroes like Eric Duncan are hard to find.
Of course, we have to give a shout out to Mr. Wonderful, a.k.a. Jake Woods.
And moving up to number 36, Gabriel Cohen is a mystery to me.
And that cut comes off of Then Play On, Brad Sparks.
We've got five hits today on the top 40 from Behind the Mask of Louis St. Amour.
And that latest hit was a cut off of Kiln House of Andrew Wyatt.
And finally, entering the 100 album chart, the pious bird of good omen we call Mike Akins.
But it's just so great. I love putting together these every single week. Always a fun time because I get to contemplate how thankful I am for all of our patrons for supporting us at It's a Thing. So you can become a member. Yes, you can give me the shout out or get bonus content, all sorts of great stuff. Head on over to patreon.com/It's a Thing. Yeah.
Oh, you can also email us your things. feedback@itsathing.me. I almost forgot. Molly will be back next week. We'll talk to you again then.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.